Good health is a crown worn by the healthy that only the ill can see. Your health really is your wealth. Join us for the next hour as we explore disease and attaining and maintaining good health. This is Dis-Chem Medical Monday, brought to you by Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
Good morning and welcome to the Arctic North Pole. What is going on with this weather? It's Monday morning. It's the Dis-Chem Medical Monday here on Chai FM. My name is Nicholas Ingle. I'm joined in studio by our fantastic controller, looking very fresh, Craig with that haircut, Craig Guthrie, and Sina Pabetsi rocking a big jacket. It's a little bit nippy out there, but we've got a great show for you today. We're talking a topic very close to my heart, if you'll excuse the pun. It's gut health, and gut health is vital in every aspect of our health. It will affect everything that is going on in our body, and we're grateful to have Dr. Nigel Plummer, a microbiologist and expert in the field of probiotics, and he's also the owner of Proven. We'll be chatting to him about gut health. Let us have your questions on 061-895-1019. That's the in-studio WhatsApp number. We're looking forward to hearing from you.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
It's Monday morning. My name is Nicholas Ingle. You're listening to 101.9 Chai FM. It's the Dis-Chem Medical Monday. We're chatting with Dr. Nigel Plummer, a microbiologist and expert in the field of probiotics, and he's owner of Proven. We're going to be chatting, gut health, unpacking its effect on our body, on our health, on our immune system. Let us have your questions or comments on our in-studio WhatsApp number. That's 061-895-1019. Dr. Plummer, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning. Pleasure.
I was going to say, with the name Nigel Plummer, you should be a drummer in a 70s British rock band.
Well, yeah, I know. I think that the name Nigel in the UK, I think there was the last time anyone was actually named was about 3 or 4 years ago. Right. So, yeah, it's a name that is linked with 1960s, 1970s, absolutely.
It's a fantastic name, absolutely. So thank you for your time. Let's chat a little bit about gut health, but could we start with a little bit of your background and expertise?
Yes, well, as you mentioned, Nicholas, I'm a microbiologist. I studied in the UK at University of Surrey, did my PhD in microbial physiology, which is just how bugs work. And then I joined the pharmaceutical company Pfizer and worked on worked with them on antibiotic development and antibiotic production. And then I moved and started my own company and started to get involved in this area of probiotics. And probiotics are just, a proxy for what we call our microbiome. And I'll talk a lot about our microbiome later on. And then as a result of that, we started to develop our own probiotics. So we started to develop our own strains and produce our own probiotics. And now we're one of the most, we're a foremost manufacturer and developer of probiotics globally, probably one of the top three globally. And we sell our probiotics through all corners of the globe. So North America, Asia, and indeed South Africa.
Oh, fantastic. With our diet, you know, there's something that's always fascinated me, looking at the early days of strongman, the originator of the original strong guys, like Eugene Sandow, sort of in the 1880s through to the 1920s, 1930s. The guys were incredibly lean, incredibly strong, lifting amazing feats. Some of these strongmen were lifting over 1,000 pounds of weight. And we're coming now into the modern era where we're struggling with bloating, with having to take supplements. And all this. How much has the quality of our diet deteriorated over the last century?
I think it's deteriorated a great deal. We have, if we look at very basic things, we have replaced in many ways basic foods that we used to eat, highly processed foods, We've introduced foods that we didn't used to have, particularly, and they've become a staple of our diet. Things like soft drinks. I mean, 60, 70 years ago, 80 years ago, people didn't have soft drinks. Now, you know, it's a major part of some people's diet is to have soft drinks. So we've replaced a lot of basic things with a lot of, if you like, highly processed, non-natural, you might want to call it, foods. And as well as that, we just eat too much. We eat too much of everything. And some of these foods tend to almost make us eat more. So when we have high sugar foods, for instance, they don't satisfy our appetite. Highly fatty foods don't satisfy our appetite either. So protein foods do. So proteins tend to be the most satisfying in terms of appetite. Fats less so, and sugars even less so. So we tend to eat more and more and more sugars. Right. So it's that combination, I think.
I think that's such a valid point on the sugars and the fats. A lot of the food is designed to hit that perfect satiation point with the sugar, the salt, and the fat, and it turns off our off switch. So we just keep eating and eating and eating. For me, I've been sober for 18 years, and my drink of choice was draft beer. So not only was I an alcoholic, well, I am an alcoholic, but I'm also a sugar addict. And what I found myself doing was, on a Friday afternoon, as a way of unwinding from the week, I would eat a slab of chocolate just for a little bit of a fun and a treat. And that ended up, within a 2 to 3 month period, being 6 150-gram slabs of Cadbury's chocolate. I couldn't eat that amount of coconut oil, a third of that. So, you know, there's no off switch anymore.
Yes. And you know, if you, I mean, I know everybody really knows these facts now, but if you look at a can of Coke, I mean,
yes,
a can of, or 500, a 500 mil bottle of Coke, which is the probably the size that most people buy, the plastic bottle of Coke, contains 53 grams of sugar. 53 grams of sugar is what? That's 11 teaspoonfuls.
Right.
I mean, You would never dream of putting 11 teaspoonfuls into a big mug of tea or into a big mug of coffee. But
yes,
every time that somebody drinks one of those, and a small can, that contains 6 or 7 teaspoonfuls of sugar. And when you see that people have 2 or 3 cans of this a day, or something similar, like Red Bull, I'm not sure if it should be mentioning names, but those kind of energy drinks, similarly, yes, they contain huge amounts of sugar. And what that does is, over a period of time, as we know, what it does is it drives what we call insulin resistance in our tissues. So because we need insulin to utilize that sugar and disperse it into our muscles and so on and so forth for use. And the more sugar that we eat, the more concentrated that is, and the levels that we eat, the more insulin that we need to produce. And over time, our tissues become resistant to that.
Right.
So it's a kind of vicious circle. And in the end, even though we're producing lots and lots of insulin, we still can't get the sugar that we're eating, we can't get it into the muscle tissues. So right, it ends up at high levels in the blood, which we call hypoglycemia, and we start depositing it in our fat cells, making us fatter.
Right. And also, sugar is almost, it's crack cocaine, it's rocket fuel for certain diseases. The more sugar you have, the greater chance you have of, I think cancer is one of them, where it loves the sugar, it loves the glucose that it's bringing in.
Yes, I mean, I think sugar has been seen as, and I think everybody realizes this, I mean, if you go back 25 years, 30 years, it was considered that fat was the big enemy, and everyone was looking at low fat foods. And there is still a sort of element of that. But I think there's a general recognition now that that sugars are the real enemy. I mean,
yes,
it doesn't mean that we can go back and eat lots and lots of saturated fats, but sugar is now seen as being the enemy. And it's, And sugar is one of the, I suppose one of the things is that there's a lot of unseen sugar in a lot of foods. Where, as I just mentioned, I mean, you wouldn't believe that a bottle of Coke contains 11 teaspoonfuls of sugar. And most foods that you might think, well, that doesn't contain sugar, actually does. So the consumption of sugar that we have from unseen sources, if you like, is normally quite high. Hence that idea of getting back to basic foods,
yes.
So unprocessed foods, because there you know much more about what you're actually eating.
With these processed foods that we're putting into our system, I know one of my favorite, there are certain tomato sauce brands where you've got water, tomato, vinegar, and then sugar. And like, why is there sugar in tomato sauce? And it's to get us to keep eating it. You could just keep going. You could have it like soup.
Yes.
It's quite,
yes.
The recipes are not just about taste. It's about tricking our brain into continuing to eat. With these foods that are coming into our system, what are the effects that it has on our gut biome?
Okay, so when we look at our guts, so there's a lot of I suppose people now, and you hear it very often that gut health is incredibly important, and if we get our gut health right, then that's the foundation of the rest of our health. And if we can't get our gut health right, then then our overall health is never going to be right. And you think, well, is there a basis to that? And the answer is yes, there is. And it comes down to the fact that the gut is actually a much more important organ than just the organ that we see for digestion and absorption of food. Obviously, most of us see our gut as being the organ that we digest and absorb foods with. And that's true, and it is its most important function. But our gut, for instance, is also our biggest immune organ. So 80% of our immune system is in our gut. I mean, 80%. And the reason for that is that the biggest, if you think of the most important function of our immune system, is to protect us from invasion by pathogenic microorganisms. Mm-hmm. And the biggest entry port of that is our gut, and hence our immune system is congregated in our gut to protect us from, if you like, the largest possible risk, which is in our gut, of acquiring disease.
Right.
So 80% of our immune system is in our gut. If you think of our hormonal system, 70% of our entire hormonal production is in our gut. If we think of our neural system, and our neural system, we think of, well, our brain and spinal cord. So our central nervous system, the brain and spinal cord. But the second biggest nervous system in our body is in our gut, which is called the enteric nervous system or the enteric neural system. And that, and our gut has more nerve endings than our skin. If you think about that,
sure.
Then the gut has more nerve endings.
Our skin's our biggest organ. What?
Yes, and you think of how sensitive our skin is to any kind of touch and feel and pain. Well, think of that the gut has more nerve endings than that, and it gives you some appreciation of how important our gut is. Now, the important thing then is that our gut then communicates with all of the other parts of our body. So the nervous system in our gut communicates with our brain, and that communication is very strong and it's continuous. We also, our gut communicates with our immune system in other parts of the body.
Right.
So our immune system in our lungs, for instance. And one of the big mediators of this communication is what we call our microbiome.
Right. So, Doc, I want to touch on that. We're just going to go to an ad break, and then we'll be right back to talk more about the gut. Dis-Chem Wellness Clinic for Adults offers convenient and professional care to you to manage your health risks. Whether you're having your regular wellness checks, such as blood pressure or cholesterol, Dis-Chem Wellness Clinics offer you a broad range of health screening services, including female health screening with pap smears, family planning, and pregnancy screening. Fast, affordable, and with care. Find your nearest Dis-Chem Wellness Clinic inside Dis-Chem Pharmacies. Better health starts here.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
It's Medical Monday here on 101.9 Chai FM, brought to you by Dis-Chem. My name is Nicholas Engel, and I'm chatting to Dr. Nigel Plummer. He's a microbiologist and expert in the field of probiotics and owner of ProVen. Let us have your questions for the doctor on 061-895-1019. We're just starting to unpack how important and how massive our gut is and the impact and effect it has on our bodies. Doctor, just before we went to ad break, we were talking about actually the size of the gut, how it affects the body, the number of nerve endings, how it's impacting with the different systems in the body. I think we got to lungs. If we could continue from there, please.
Yes, just to mention that our gut communicates with every other part of our body, and it's a constant and continuous communication. And for instance, our gut, which is, as I said earlier on, our largest immune organ, connects with our lungs, which contain, if you like, another part of our immune system. And it can send messages, for instance, where if we direct, let's say, the expansion of anti-pathogenic white blood cells, and we generate those in the gut, we can instruct that same anti-pathogenic sort of combating type of white blood cell to generate itself in the lungs as well and give protection against coughs and colds.
Right.
And one of the big mediators of that, as I mentioned earlier on, is our microbiome. And that's where probiotics come in. Probiotics contain what we consider to be the most beneficial members of this wonderful community and complex community of bacteria that we call our microbiome. Probiotics are all that they are, is just what we consider to be the most beneficial members. And these probiotics are able to do this communication, able to communicate via the gut with and stimulate our immune system to have an impact, that can then have an impact all over our body.
So even if you're eating well and you're looking after your diet and your nutrition, you still need probiotics because we can't control everything that's coming into our system. I think we're also bringing in toxins just from our environment, from the air quality, our water quality. Do you wonder how big an effect does the quality of your water have on your gut biome and your gut health?
Quality of water is very important, but I think that now that most people, I think it's less important now. I mean, our quality of water, where it had a big impact is if you've got a low quality of water, and it contains germs and so is disease producing. But in terms of probably the most important impact that we have on our microbiome, which has obviously been a situation over the last 100 years, is the impact that antibiotics have.
You're right.
Now I used to work in the antibiotic industry, and before saying anything at all negative about antibiotics were by far the most beneficial advance in human healthcare in the 20th century. Nothing comes close in terms of the discovery and the use of antibiotics in preventing death and preventing suffering. Nothing comes close, but there are some negatives associated with the use of antibiotics, and the antibiotics have a detrimental impact, sometimes a devastating impact, on this beneficial microbiome that we have in our gut. And so, for instance, we know that frequent use of antibiotics raises your risk of irritable bowel syndrome, for instance, dramatically. We know that frequent use of antibiotics, particularly in kids, raises the risk of obesity. And this is not a direct relationship. This is that the antibiotic is having an impact on our microbiome, and that negative impact on our microbiome is raising our risk of irritable bowel syndrome, raising our risk of obesity when we are kids, meaning that the microbiome obviously then has an effect on obesity and has an effect on our immune function and so forth. So, and on our gut function. So antibiotics are something that we all take. In the UK and most parts of the world, we all take probably one course of antibiotics every year. Probably in some countries, even more. But every time that we take a course of antibiotics, we have a detrimental effect on our microbiome. And one way of repairing that is to take probiotics.
So that brings us straight into my next question. How do we support our gut? How do we support our microbiome through probiotics? And are there different kinds?
There are lots of different kinds. And in the end, I mean, and there are probiotics, if you go back 20 years, people didn't know what a probiotic was. There were very few products on the marketplace. It was in the hands of health professionals more than anything else. But now it's become a mainstream type of dietary supplement. And it's a big scientific topic as well, because what we're seeing is that probiotics can do things that medicines, for instance, drugs can't, because they do have this impact in terms of replacing and repairing and supporting our microbiome. In terms of the types of probiotics that are out there, there are loads. And the question that is often asked of me is, well, how can you tell which is the best ones? And it's not easy. It's not easy from the consumer's point of view, because probiotics are complicated. But the sort of acid test is for the consumer, if they can, to look for a probiotic that has been shown to be effective in clinical trials. This is how drugs are ultimately measured, their clinical trial effects on a particular disease or on a particular condition. And it's the same thing for probiotics. And there are probiotics out there that have significant levels of clinical support, Proven being one of them. But that will be that's the acid test, Nicholas. Right. But it's difficult to see, and because often we can't say the thing on pack.
Yes.
But if we say that, let's say the Proven brand, we've now done 36 full double-blind clinical trials.
So a few years ago, just before COVID came out, I got whacked with a really bad, I got very, very sick. And it may have been very early COVID in July 2019, after coming back from the World Championships for powerlifting in Sweden. And my gut health got destroyed by the antibiotics put on. And I went on Proven, and that's brought me back to you know, feeling stronger and health, and that was suggested by my GP as well. So very, very happy with that. So I'm one of your clinical trials. And one of the, just to go off the topic and not to upset my dear producer here, Sina, but we were saying that one of the indicators that I wasn't well, my gut health wasn't great, was the color, the consistency of my stool. It was not normal. Something was going on. And over the time of taking the probiotic and starting to physically feel better, I could see a change in that. How big an indicator to our gut health is our stool and what it looks like? And then after that, I actually want to get onto how does the consumer talk to their pharmacist? They walk into Dis-Chem, they're feeling a little bit off. What do they say? So firstly, our poop.
Okay, stool, it is very important. I mean, it's if you take the opposites, with somebody who has diarrhea and somebody who has, let's say, chronic constipation. I mean, there you have, if you like, the sort of two ends of the spectrum. Put it like that. And maybe I should answer that by just going back to the sort of IBS thing. So irritable bowel syndrome. So this is by far the most common gastrointestinal condition now. So most gastroenterology units in hospitals, that by far the biggest thing that they're dealing with is IBS. As I mentioned, a big risk factor to developing IBS is antibiotics. But the symptoms that people tend to see, and they might not have clinically blown IBS, if you like. They might have mild symptoms, but the symptoms that you tend to see are things like bloating.
Yep.
Which is very common. And if you look at the levels of IBS in South Africa, it's around about 7%. And if you consider, if you like, the more that's diagnosed. So 7% of adults. So it's very, very common. And if you look at the non-diagnosed, it probably adds another 7%. So it's a 14% of the population. And the type of symptoms that you see are bloating, you see intermittent pain. and severity of pain. So you have intermittent pain that might be mild or it might be quite severe. And then alongside that, you either have this IBS syndrome with bloating, the pain associated with either constipation or with diarrhea.
Right.
And often what you see with this, and this is what a lot of listeners may have, is that they see that they have oscillating periods of constipation and diarrhea.
Right.
And that means that they have they have little confidence in their bowel movements. And that then affects their quality of life because can I go out because I might get caught? You can get caught short very, very easily, if you like. And so they go, well, no, I can't go out. So it affects quality of life. And I think how probiotics interact with that. We've done two very good and large clinical trials looking at IBS. And in this, we had constipation IBS, and we had diarrheal IBS, and we had this oscillating form as well.
Right.
And in all cases, in these clinical trials, it's a placebo-controlled trial, we saw a significant reduction in all of these symptoms by taking probiotics. And that effect, we did the trial over an 8-week period, but the effect starts to be felt within the first 10 days of taking the probiotic. And what we saw was 50% reduction in the symptomology. And if you've got elements of diarrhea, we found that was corrected. And if you had elements of constipation, that was also corrected. So it wasn't that it just worked on one type of... So it normalizes, coming back to the point, it normalizes your stool, whether you have a slightly constipated type of stool or a slightly diarrheal type of stool, taking probiotics and normalize it.
Right. And just that experience of going to the bathroom, not having to dread it, is a huge impact on your quality of life. So
yes.
I think we have a couple of questions from our listeners, which I'll go through, and then I'd like to chat about sort of what do you say to your pharmacist, and then the different kinds of probiotics, maintenance versus correcting an issue, and, you know, is this something we should be taking on a daily basis? So first off, we have a message from Carol. She just says, I love the name Dr. Plummer. So there you go, Doc. Absolutely lovely.
Thank you.
Yeah. We have another one. Hi, Nicholas. I have a hiatus hernia and am taking, I'm being dyslexic, reading some of the medication names, Doc, is always fun. Pantoparazole. Can you ask the doctor, is that in fact that taking pantoparazole decreases the acid in one's stomach? Totally unnatural for the digestion of food. So that's the one question. I think would you like to answer that, or is it enough information?
If you're taking an acid suppressant, and a lot of this is one of the most common types of medication now. So to reduce stomach acid, it causes dyspepsia, if you like, but it doesn't have a massive impact on the microbiome. It also it does have an impact on digestion of food. But it can be relatively minor. So, for instance, we have some enzymes that actually work in these stomach to start the digestion of food. And they work at that low pH,
right?
And they won't work when you're taking a suppressant of acid. But most of the digestion that we have occurs when we get into the duodenum of the gut, and that is at neutral pH, so pH 7, and the enzymes work there, and they compensate for any loss that we've had in the by that. If you like, first digestion that occurs in the stomach. So generally speaking, reduction in acid production will have a minor but probably not very noticeable effect on the digestion of food, but not a massive effect on our microbiome.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you, Doc. Next question is from Carol K. We get a lot of Carols on the show. It's wonderful. Nicholas, ask the good doctor, when is the best time to take a probiotic? I think that's a great question. I take one on my way to bed every night. Would that be beneficial?
Okay. This is a good question, and it's asked very often. And generally speaking, the time of day is not so important as taking the probiotic with a little bit of food. Mm-hmm. That is really important. Okay. And it doesn't need to be a big meal, but a little snack or a glass of milk or something like that. A little bit of food with the probiotic is what is actually necessary. And people say, well, why? And the answer is that normally, and it comes back to stomach acidity. Our stomach, when it's empty, is very, very acidic. And although the probiotic organisms are quite resistant to low levels of acid, this really intense acidity that we have in the empty stomach, that will have a detrimental effect on them. When we eat a little bit of food, it actually neutralizes that acid. And so the probiotics are fully protected then. And so the answer to that question is, does it really matter? She's taking it just before she goes to bed, perfect. But take it with just a little bit of food.
A little bit of food. Fantastic. Doc, we're just going to go to ad breaks. We're going to come back. We have one more question, which I think is great. It says, hi, I eat yogurt. How much should I take not to take a probiotic? But I think that's going to be quite, there's a little bit more to that question. So we'll get to that as soon as we're back from our ads.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
You're listening to the Dis-Chem Medical Monday here on 101.9 Chai FM. We're having an absolutely fantastic conversation with Dr. Nigel Plummer, and he is a microbiologist, an expert in the field of probiotics, and he's owner of Proven. We've had some great questions from our listeners. Just before we went to the ad break, we had a question about eating yogurt. Can you eat enough yogurt to not worry about taking a probiotic? I think I may even have an answer for that, but because I would say a yogurt would be a very specific type of probiotic, and it might not cover everything that you need. So hopefully I'm right on that one, Doc.
It's kind of right, Nicholas. It's kind of right. So first of all, taking yogurt is a great thing, and the type of organisms, the bacteria that are used to make yogurt are similar to the type of bacteria that we have in probiotics, which is why the question is often asked. However, there is a difference, and it is that over the years, those organisms that make yogurt, they make fantastic yogurt, and they've been trained, if you like, to do that, to make them that lovely, creamy, tasty, consistent yogurt. And because they've been trained to do that, they're much less well adapted to going into our gut. Our gut is a very competitive environment. It's a difficult environment. You think of what's going on in there, and you have these huge numbers of bacteria that are in there already, and our probiotic bacteria have to be able to compete, which means that they have to be really acclimatized to the gut. And the yogurt organisms that make beautiful yogurt are not. So they don't work, and they don't do this communication with the immune system and so on and so forth that probiotic organisms do. Just to look at if you take our Proven product and you try to make yogurt from it, you'll get a kind of this sort of, you'll get the separation of the milk, so you get the you get the sort of liquidy bit on the top and the sort of clumps and bumps underneath it, but it's not going to be a very nice yogurt. And
that I so want to try that.
Yeah, it's almost like horses for horses.
Yeah,
yogurt is great, but if you're looking for a specific effect from a probiotic, take a probiotic.
Yeah. We're just going to a live read quickly, but I suppose also another answer to that question would be, if you're going into a dodgy neighborhood, wouldn't you want to take as many big burly mates with you as possible, not just one? Absolutely.
Yes, exactly, exactly.
The Johannesburg Philharmonic Orchestra celebrates South Africa's rich and diverse cultural history this Heritage Day as we present King Shaka, A Vision, A Nation, A Destiny, a monumental work featuring South Africa's top violinist and the Gauteng Choirs, and the JPO. The concert takes place at the Linda Auditorium on the 24th of September at 3 p.m. Tickets are available through Quick Ticket. So, Doc, coming back to some of the questions, they're coming in thick and fast. I absolutely love this. If we can go to a few more, and then I just wanted to touch on how do we pick the right one and the different types. Maybe just before going to this question, something that I've experienced and that's really helped me whenever I travel, because sometimes I forget to take my probiotics. If everything's going well, I tend to forget. If things are feeling a bit off, I take them. But when I travel, I stock up a couple of days before to make sure that everything's good, and I take them with me. And I found that's been made the biggest difference, whether it's airline food or eating in different restaurants or strange places, to feeling okay and healthy.
Yes, and I think that's. I mean, in terms of taking probiotics. So one of the things that is often asked is are there situations where you should always take a probiotic?
Yeah.
So what are the situations where you should always take a probiotic, and what are the situations where you should take it only when necessary? Okay. Situations where you should always take a probiotic. When you're taking antibiotics, mm-hmm. always take a probiotic alongside the antibiotic.
Sorry to interrupt. Can I ask a question on that? If you're starting to feel unwell and you think you may have to go to the doctor, should you start taking your probiotic then to almost preload your gut if you are going to be given antibiotics?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, if as soon as you start feeling unwell, and there are other reasons for that as well, then start taking the probiotic. But if you're going on antibiotics, then you might not know that you're going to go on antibiotics. But if you do, then when you go and collect the antibiotic from the pharmacy, then ask them for the probiotic. They might suggest it anyway, but ask them if they don't. The second area which is a sort of niche area, obviously, if anyone's got symptoms of IBS, mm-hmm. anything like that, or they've been diagnosed with IBS, let's say we've done two big clinical trials showing that probiotics absolutely significantly decrease the symptomology of IBS. In that situation, for those people, often they have to take quite a high dose, first of all, for probably 8 to 12 weeks, and then they can go on to a lower dose after that.
Right.
And another one, just one more, which is a bit more contentious, but I think is really, really important in terms of when people should take a probiotic, and that is for during birth. But where a woman is giving birth, she should give a probiotic to the baby, and probably for 6 months. And what we did was a very large clinical trial, looking at exactly that. We gave probiotics to newborn babies daily for 6 months of age, and we were looking at their risk of developing allergy.
Okay.
And we reduced the risk of developing allergy, and the first allergic disease that you get as a baby is eczema or mm-hmm. atopic eczema. And we reduced that by 50%. And so, sure. And that would be the same, is likely to be the same for other types of allergy as well, like asthma and food allergies. So that I think is another very important one. And there's one more. And we did some trials using children and we looked at coughs and colds. And we did two trials looking at coughs and colds. And we showed that you can reduce coughs and colds by 20%, 25% by giving a probiotic to children daily over the winter period. And not only that, we reduced absenteeism from school by the use of the probiotic by 30% wow. in both trials. Because the kids were less sick, they went right. to the doctors less, they had less antibiotics, less other medication, less time off school.
So it's really important. The old adage, prevention is far better than cure. So
exactly.
So, Doc, I need your help on this one. I got into trouble with Sharon. She wrote, Nicholas forgot to ask my previous message, the question from the previous message, which probiotic would help with her hernia problems?
Which probiotic with her hernia problems? We would, we've got two that I think would be, well, we've got three that I think would be really, really helpful. The first one is what we call our adult probiotic, so proven adult probiotic. That's the one we've done most of our clinical trials on. Mm-hmm. That is what I would suggest that she uses. We also have a female probiotic, one for women, which contains basically exactly the same, but it contains some other elements that are specifically for women. And if they have any kind of, if you like, genitourinary tract issues, cystitis or prone to that, then we have a woman's probiotic that not only looks after, if you like, the gastrointestinal effects, but looks after the genitourinary tract effects as well.
Right.
So that's our women's probiotic. So either the adult or our women's probiotic. Oh,
fantastic. We're going to go to an ad break. We'll be back. We have two more questions. I've got a few more questions. We're going to try and condense it before we run out of time, Doc. Thank you.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
It's the Dis-Chem Medical Monday. I'm chatting with Dr. Nigel Plummer, microbiologist and expert in the field of probiotics. He is the owner of Proven. Doc, just a quick question for myself, and then I'm going to go to the listener questions. Next month in South Africa, we have the Commonwealth Powerlifting Championships and the World Masters Powerlifting Championships. So over 1,000 athletes coming out. This is what I'm involved in through my gym, working with young athletes. Whey protein and supplements and all of these different pre-workout, post-workout, all of these different supplementations, creatine. If you're taking this, how important is it to be taking a probiotic as well? Because sometimes the quality of the product can be dependent on the affordability of the product, if I may say that.
Yes. We've got some good evidence. In fact, we've got very, very good evidence, again, from clinical trials, that probiotics can be really, really effective in enhancing performance, but not necessarily in the kind of powerlifting type of exercise, but in endurance athletes.
Right.
So we've done a lot of work now with marathon runners, with triathletes, with the Ironman competition, and we've a lot of clinical trial work. And what we've seen is that by taking probiotics, you can improve performance. And so we've done trials on the Barcelona Triathlon. We've done trials on the Marathon de Sable, which is this crazy marathon. It's a marathon every day for 7 days across the Sahara Desert. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah.
And what we've seen is enhanced performance in all the times that we've been doing this. Why is this? And part of it is that we have an impact in terms of improving gut health.
Right.
And improving, because a lot of these long distance runners, particularly the runners, they get this. It's like an IBS type mm-hmm. Syndrome. It helps with that. But we've also found that probiotics can enhance glucose uptake. So, you know, these endurance athletes,
the goo
during they're taking glucose drinks. What we found, but they can only absorb so much. What we found is that by taking probiotics, the probiotics enable more sure. absorption of those glucose drinks, and that leads to, if you like, better performance.
Yeah, more
We've
fuel.
Seen things like 5% better performance
that's
by taking sure. probiotics.
In an endurance sport, that's absolutely incredible. So, Doc, let's see if we can pack. We've got three more questions. Let's see if we can pack them in. Firstly, just tuned in, what is Proven? Sorry, I've missed so much. The first one.
Proven is just our brand of probiotics that we have in South Africa. We have four products on sale within the brand. There's a ladies product, there's an adult product, there's a product called Shape Line, which is for people who want to lose weight. Mm-hmm. And we have a children's product as well, a children's chewable tablet, which contains a multivitamin as well. It's the only thing I would say is that it has one of the, it's probably the top three probiotic brands in the world now in terms of evidence by clinical trials of showing beneficial health benefits.
Fantastic, Doc. Thank you. Then we have one from Sephora. Hi, Nicholas. Please ask your guest, how does food grown broad spectrum probiotics 10 strain compare to normal probiotics? A question. I have no idea what that means.
Okay. Again, coming back, it's important that this is just what type of probiotic, and it's important to understand that the acid test for a probiotic is, does it work? And the reason that probiotics have been, or some probiotics have been shown to work consistently and across a lot of different conditions, if you like, and they've been shown to work by clinical trials. What this lady or gentleman is asking is, if it's got more strains, like 10 strains in it, is that better than having two strains?
Right.
If it's, and how much do you need? So don't worry about the number of strains. You can have 100 strains in it, but if those strains don't work, then it doesn't make any effect.
Right.
So look for a product that has got some kind of clinical trial benefit. In terms of numbers, look for something that is giving you at least 10 billion, what we call CFUs, or 10 billion bacteria a day. It normally say it on the pack. It would normally say it on the pack, 25 billion, 12.5 billion, or something like that.
Right.
So look for a minimum of 10 billion per daily dose.
Fantastic. Thank you, Doc. We have to start wrapping up. We had another question about, does it assist with weight loss? I think we've covered it, that it does. So if the listener can go and listen to the podcast, that'll be absolutely fantastic. Dr. Nigel Plummer, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate your time and your input. Fantastic questions from our listeners. Always an indicator of a great show. Thank you so much.
Been a pleasure. Thank you.